Welcome back to Don't Call It a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
Today, we are starting a new book, a new self-published book.
Mm-hmm.
A lesser-known number called Whispers of the Storm by Z.B. Steele.
Yep.
And we're doing it in thirds, so we have gone up to chapter 17 for today's episode.
That's right, Luke, but before we get started, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think that they actually stopped making Mission Impossible movies at the worst time? Because they've released the final Mission Impossible movie starring Tom Cruise.
Yes.
You're familiar with the concept of Mission Impossible?
I'm familiar.
Tom Cruise is like a secret agent who like rappels down a building or jumps out of a plane to save the world from like nuclear Armageddon or a bioterrorism incident. He does a lot of like acrobatics and punching and fighting and stuff.
Yeah. A lot of running too. Great runner.
Yeah. Runs a lot. The first Mission Impossible movie, Tom Cruise was like, I don't know, 26. And the most recent one, he is like 80 or something. I don't know. It doesn't matter. The point is, Luke, the mission becomes so much more impossible the older Tom Cruise gets. And I think that becomes a part of the experience.
Okay.
Like witnessing a 25-year-old Tom Cruise rappel down a little air shaft to like snatch a USB or something. I'm like, yeah, you know what? That actually seems pretty possible. Watching an 80-year-old Tom Cruise jump out of one plane and catch the wing of another one, pull himself up into the plane and knock out the pilot, who's like a 30-year-old man, by the way, like 30-year-old right. Soldier. Yeah, that's impossible. You did it.
You're saying they should lean into the idea of the aging Mission Impossible agent.
Yeah, I think, like, you want to make a fantastical movie about an impossible mission.
Yeah.
And then you could even have characters saying the phrase in the movie. You could be like, hey, listen, Tom, that's impossible. For you right now, that's impossible. This mission is impossible. And you just have Tom lean in and be like, no, I'm going to do this one. I swear it's only me that can do it. I'm going to do it this time again.
This is like their... do the stakes still stay really high?
They keep going up. That's the amazing part
of it. They keep going up. And then, okay, here's the thing. I haven't watched a Mission Impossible movie in a while.
Yeah. Smart.
But I'm assuming it's still like their... whoever is like putting the mission together, don't know, is still like choosing Tom Cruise.
Well, here's the thing, Luke, that's actually really interesting about Mission Impossible movies is the person putting together the mission is usually Tom.
Okay.
Tom is usually the one being like, the government doesn't know what the heck's going on. I do, and I need to save the world, so I'm going to put a team together and do this impossible mission. And I think, like...
Okay.
You know, obviously there's the physical aspect to it, that just watching an 80-year-old man knock out a 30-year-old, like, Russian special ops soldier while they're fighting in a submarine is like so funny and also impossible, part of the mission. Impossible. But I think, Luke, you have the opportunity to lean into cognitive decline here, where Tom starts to suggest components of the mission that are truly impossible. Like, okay, first, Simon Pegg, you're gonna jump out of this airplane without a parachute, and then you're just going to grab onto a tree branch as you fall down to the earth to slow your fall. And that's how you're going to descend into the jungle for this mission. Yeah. And Simon Pegg's over here like, Tom, I think that's actually impossible. And Tom's like, that's the whole name of the game, baby. But he's just...
Okay, in this world, is it transitioning more into a comedy movie at this point?
Now, I don't think Tom's ego would ever let that happen in a major way,
right?
Like,
but this is the two-parter of where like the movie itself is leaning into
yes
the aging Tom Cruise thing,
yes,
but also the meta, like the real world.
Oh, you're saying Tom himself.
Tom, the real Tom, is also so aging.
What you're saying is you need a brilliant producer on this film who is just like yes. letting Tom go wild, and then in the edit, they show Tom one edit where it makes it look really cool and actiony. And then right. they release to the public the edit that's like, hey guys, this is pretty funny, right?
It's like reality TV.
Mm-hmm.
Where famously, you can't control the edit if you're one of the cast members, right?
Famously, yeah. That's, yeah.
Everybody knows that. They can do you dirty, mm-hmm. Dan, on the edit. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And that's what's going to happen to Tom.
Yeah.
Now, to keep him going, because we got to get, like, you know, 20 more movies.
Right. Like we said, it becomes more and more impossible as Tom gets older and older.
Right, but to keep Tom on board, you show him a different edit than what actually goes to theaters.
You have to. Yeah, and you just keep him so busy filming these bad boys that he never has a chance to go see it in the theater, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm here for this.
Now, there is one...
That would get me back on the train, I think.
There's one problem with these. There is one problem with these, Luke, and that is that Tom Cruise is the producer of these movies, which makes sense why they... kept being produced so long after the mission has become impossible, right? Like,
right,
you know, so you got to sneak somebody else onto that production crew, onto those production creds. But as soon as you do that, we've got a potential for a huge reboot in this franchise, I think.
Yeah. Okay, I'm here for that. Now, you watched the last one, right?
Oh, hell yeah, I did, Luke.
Are you going to the new one?
If they released another one?
Wait, I thought that they just released the second part of the final or whatever.
Well, Luke, the thing about that is, so they actually changed. So I know too much about this, and I'm going to open the door here into the Tom Cruise Mission Impossible verse. So the last two movies that have come out, The last movie was called The Final Reckoning, okay? It was called Mission uh-huh. Impossible, Tom jumps out of a plane, The Final Reckoning. The one before that was called Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1. Now, from that naming convention, you would be led to believe that the second movie would be called Dead Reckoning Part 2. But what happened was not a lot of people went and saw Dead Reckoning Part 1. And so I think Tom and the studio funding Tom was like, we're wrapping this up. We're wrapping this up right now, Tom. You're not doing any more of these.
Fair.
And so they changed the name of the last film to be The Final Reckoning. And in interviews, Tom has said it will be the last Mission Impossible movie. But in interviews, Tom has also said he might come back.
I love how deep you've gone into this.
Yeah. I had to know because after watching that movie, the actual experience of it was crazy. But afterwards, I was like, wow, you know what? That actually was an impossible mission. I do not believe that he could have done any of those things. So good job, Tom.
And that's good. And that's correct. That's what it's supposed to be.
In this essay, I will do an impossible mission. And he did. So anyway, okay. I think the missions only become more impossible over time, and we need these movies to never end.
Yeah, I agree. Keep it going. No matter how many people watch.
You got to do it for you. That's what art is, you know? You don't do it for the audience. You do it for you.
Yeah, 100%.
Anyway, Luke, speaking of art, should we talk Whispers of the Storm?
Yes, let's do. Okay, so Whispers of the Storm, again, up to chapter 17.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to come out and do a big picture thing first.
Yes.
This feels very Name of the Windy, right?
I mean, come on. This is one of my early notes here, as I'm like, the Name of the Wind vibes are off the charts.
Big Name of the Wind vibes, both in the like format of how it's set up of a guy telling his story, And also, and this will come probably throughout kind of later, and also I think some of the like character vibes.
Yep. We got a quoth. We got a quoth.
We got a big quoth going. Yeah. But that's okay, but that's gonna come later.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that on the outset.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So I do want to start with kind of the first thing that happens, and I think this is only reinforced throughout this section. What is this place? Like,
this is a great question.
Like, I don't understand if they are like child soldier slaves that they're like purchasing and building like a child soldier army here, and if they're the bad guys, or if they're just like a school people go to, but they paid for him.
Yeah.
Which makes me think he's not allowed to leave.
Right.
Therefore, he is a child soldier slave that they are indoctrinating and training at this facility.
Yeah. I know this is lame, but I want to know how the economics work of this, because it seems they talk a lot about how a lot of these people just end up as soldiers and going to just like die.
Yeah.
And it's like, we're investing a lot of money in these children.
Yep. Yep. Especially
not to be like callous about it, but
they're giving them so much education.
Yeah.
Why? What? Why? What is this?
Well, this is like the kind of education that in other books, I feel like people pay a lot of money to go to an academy like this.
Yes. This is what I can't figure out. Why did they pay Redland's dad for him to get to go to school?
Right.
And the other, because, okay, he has to be a slave and just not realize it yet. And I think the tone is just not, they're too nice for being enslavers, because if he were able to just leave whenever he wanted, then this doesn't make sense. Economically, this doesn't make sense, because he just goes home and then his dad brings him back and gets another payday and they just keep doing that.
Right.
So,
and this is where it's confusing, because it's like they are, it says in the book, I forget who says this, but it's like they have a pretty good opportunity here.
Yes.
I mean, we haven't seen what happens when they like graduate or whatever quite yet.
Right.
But they're really well fed. They have a place to stay. They're getting education. They're getting like really nice equipment, or at least Redlin is.
Right. The food is amazing.
Yes, the food's very good.
What? Why aren't people clamoring to get in here?
Yeah.
I feel like if I learned about this place, I'd be like, they will pay me to go here?
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Of course.
It's weird, right? The tone is so weird, and here's what I think, Luke. I needed to see somebody who tried to leave and what they do to them. We've yet to see anybody who's tried to escape, because it can't be good what happens to you.
I'm curious both about those that try to escape and also those that just like fail their classes. Because, I mean, I guess those people just, like, become soldiers. Is it an army? I don't know what the, like, positioning of this school is.
Training camp?
Is it, like,
terrorist cell? What is this? This is my first note. What is this place? I still do not quite know.
Right, because they complain a lot. The older people, like guards, complain about is it Alessandra is the
the headmistress
of it, like sending them out to die in like her wars or something.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know. I mean, maybe we will hear about it. I guess, you know, we're still in the early stages.
Right.
But it's like, what's the geopolitics going on here?
You also think, Luke, that you have to have, like, investing this much into the education of these slaves that you're raising means that yeah. they're so capable of, like, escaping you. Like, one yeah. night they just run. Maybe they're out on at war trying. You're trying to get them to do the war you want. And one night they just leave because they have so many other skills that they can take anywhere else, and somebody else will pay them instead of forcing them to do their bidding. Can't tell, it's really tripping me up how this whole thing works. Like, I don't understand it.
Yeah, let me take that, what you said just now, like a step further.
Yeah.
So there's different paths that they yeah. can take. Mm-hmm. And the one that Redlin seems to be going, it's Redlin, right?
Yeah.
Is something called a vanguard.
Mm-hmm.
Which is basically like guarding, like a traveling guard, I guess, for like aristocrats.
Yeah, a bishop and
nobles.
Or a herald, which we don't really know what those are, but they seem to have some connection to the religion. So maybe like a priest or somebody like close to one of the deities.
Right. Which, first of all, I don't know, like, they seem to be holding these vanguards in really high esteem. It's mm-hmm. like, they're just guards?
Yeah, that sounds pretty boring.
It's kind of lame. But also, presumably this is where this school is getting some of its funding from.
Yeah.
By like renting out these guys.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point about them being trained so well, what's preventing them from just being like, all right, I'm going to start my own business, I guess. You don't have to pay the high billing rate of, I forget the name of the school.
It's like Enlin or Enlin or something like that.
Yeah, you don't have to pay the high billing rate of that. You can just pay me directly.
Yeah.
It's got to be a lot of people doing that.
Cut out the middle, man. Just hire me.
Yeah. So it's odd. We haven't seen the full picture, Dan. Let's keep an eye out.
We've seen it. We've seen a teen's picture of what's going on here.
Right. Right. Maybe this is being funded by some external grants. And it's really just to build up the capabilities of the youth in this.
Oh, I love this. This nation? Is like a land. It's certainly a land, we could call it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We started big picture.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go back to the very beginning for a second.
Okay.
So he starts his life as, like, he has a mom and dad, a couple siblings,
mm-hmm.
and they're...
And a dog. Kind of just... Dog.
And a dog. And they're... They, like, live completely isolated, yeah. right? And it seems like they're kind of doing fine. I mean, again, we don't really know. Like, maybe their parents were just, like... I guess he kind of says they would, like, make sure that their kids had food, even mm-hmm. if they didn't. So maybe they're not doing great or anything. Anyway, that's kind of beside the point. He's, like, fairly pro on his family. And then his dad, like, sells him.
Yeah. We should say he's fairly pro in the, like, narrative back in time. Like, when he is a young person, he's pro on his family. As an old person... When he's telling the story, he explicitly states he has no love for any of them anymore except the dog. So he's not a fan of them anymore.
Right. But not like, I think that's just because he doesn't know them.
Yeah, probably.
Anymore. I think because he's still telling the story, right? Yeah. Like,
mm-hmm.
And I guess I just, it's also, my note is basically just like, so is his family good or bad? You know?
Yeah. Well,
and I know we're allowed gray areas.
This doesn't feel that gray though, because you're right. Here's an important question. What do you remember what his like mom and dad did as like their jobs?
Well, they didn't like have, they lived off the land basically, right?
Right. So like, how bad are you at that?
Right.
Why is that your job if you're barely making it anymore? Like, one, it didn't sound like any of their kids were sick. It didn't sound like they suddenly came under intense pressure and had to make a tough choice. It sounds like they just were like, I really want the new N64.
Right.
And
because my other note was like, what are they doing with this money?
Right. I don't know. Unclear.
but the big thing is they seem to like love him.
Yeah.
And it's positioned in such a way as like, maybe it's, they just needed to make ends meet.
Right. Or,
but then like, why the way that they did it is not nice.
Correct.
Right. His dad took him on a grueling.
Yeah.
3-day hike without telling him anything.
Yep.
Drops him off, collects the sack of gold or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then leaves without looking back.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
It's like, I think they're bad.
I think they're bad because you could position it in a better way.
Right. Now, Luke, I do think one aspect we are neglecting here is that this story is being told from the perspective of the person who was abandoned.
Right.
And there are hints that his family was a little bit spooked by him. They described him as being like a killer and having a killer's eyes. And maybe he is omitting the parts where he was like torturing small animals in the woods.
Sure.
And so his family was like, we got to get this guy out of here. He's going to be a disaster.
We got to get this guy out of here and into martial training.
We got to send him to military school. That'll straighten him up.
Right. Okay. No, this is a valid point. He is kind of creepy.
And so I think he might be kind of a freak, you know? I think maybe they saw him out in the woods with a stick, like practicing sword fighting. And they were like, we got to get this kid out of here. He's into anime. We got to cut him loose before he metastasizes.
Okay. Yeah. I can see that. He deserved it.
Yeah, he probably deserved it. I also think he's not necessarily the most observant fella.
Okay. Sure.
And I think especially when he is talking with Alessandra and he's getting his class list.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets a piece of lamb skin with the wool still on it and has him like prick his finger and put his blood on the lamb skin.
Yeah.
Guy, like, you gotta watch out for blood magic. Don't just be doing it because somebody told you to. You have no idea what spells they've just done on your body and mind, my guy. Ask one question. Be like, hey, why?
Yeah.
That's because it also stuff.
It does this weird effect, and then she gives him some like strange advice.
Yes.
Right.
She tells him to pretend he's fighting an iceberg or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's a couple times where weird things, seemingly significant things, happen.
Yeah.
And he kind of shrugs it off.
Yeah.
Like, what's the deal with that scene where he falls off the ledge? You know what I'm talking about? He falls off the top of the tower.
Yep.
And is like going to die.
Yes. Yes.
And someone catches him.
Mm-hmm.
And like throws him back onto solid ground. And then he just like walks away.
He's just like, whoa, that was crazy.
That was wild.
This is what I mean. I think he's having blackouts. I think he's having waking blackouts.
Yeah.
Where the shit is happening to him, and he just, it's not getting included in the story.
This is true.
Or, Luke, this is part of a bigger plot.
Okay.
Because, Luke, he says at the beginning that not all stories are true. Like, every story has a lie, has, like, lies in it.
Mm-hmm.
And he is telling this story to basically a detective who's bringing him in to be executed.
Right.
Homie's got a plan, right?
I would think so.
Like, the story for how he got captured and is currently being brought in is so convenient, so obviously part of a larger plan that he's doing.
Yeah. That the like whole... he got captured intentionally.
Correct. Yeah. Like, you have to be asking, like, what's this guy doing? What's this? What's the plan that he's got cooking up? And I think this might be part of the plan. He is, like, trying to... He's trying to sway this detective in some way using this story. For he's what like, ends?
Look how awesome I am.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He's like, hey, have you heard of the Chosen One narrative? Because let me set this up for you. It's going to be awesome.
Let's actually talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
So this, as we mentioned, it's very similar to The Name of the Wind.
Yeah.
Where there's a lot of like cringe boasting, I will call it.
Yeah, dude is aura farming so hard.
Well said. Dan knows the Gen Z slang.
Mm-hmm. I had to look that up, but yeah.
Now, okay. I think it's fairly clear that the author takes some inspiration from Name of the Wind.
Right. Yeah.
The critiques of Name of the Wind and Quoth are like fairly well known.
Yes.
So my question is the author like knowingly doing this? I'm choosing to say yes.
Ooh, interesting. You're saying you think the author is leaning in because of the critiques of Name of the Wind, and there's going to be some payoff for it. Like, it's going to be...
I'm hoping that's the case.
Right, right. That the
Let
author,
me say that.
Yeah, okay. I'm skeptical, Luke.
I'm skeptical too, but I'm hoping that... The author is setting him up to be like an unreliable narrator situation.
Yeah.
Where he's like, look how awesome I was.
Mm-hmm.
Or am.
That would be excellent, Luke.
Because throughout a lot of this, he's like, man, I'm like so thoughtful and really cool and like really fast.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I actually was the best swordsman there day one. How crazy is that?
He's like, they told me to like just go out there and run. I had just gotten there. And I was just blowing by everybody. They're so jealous.
I actually ran so hard that I couldn't run for the whole hour. It was like, I don't know, it's like 55, 56 minutes. I didn't quite make it. And
just dead sprint for 55 minutes.
Yeah,
probably.
I was sprinting as hard as I could, soaked in sweat. Also, I didn't even have my running shoes yet. I was doing them in like clogs. And I
was in a cloak, I think, during this, right?
I was actually in my bathrobe and they wouldn't let me take it off because they didn't want me to intimidate the other students with my big wang. And then I had to talk to the captain to apologize because I didn't run for the whole hour. And I just basically said, like, look, I'm sorry. I gave you everything I got. And if that's not enough for you, you can kiss these nuts. And he said, wow, you're so awesome.
And everyone was like really impressed with with my abilities and my like mindset. I have a growth mindset, by the way.
Right, they gave me like the coolest sword that, you know, the sword that the legends are about, like Thunderdome or whatever. Right. Yeah, they gave me that because I was so good at swords, like day two.
I invented this sick move, by the way. Maybe you've heard of it.
Hold
on.
You
do this thing where you like fake a swipe and then you like change hands really quickly and then you do like a back swipe. It's sick.
And it's like world famous, so you've heard of it, I'm sure.
It doesn't sound stupid. It sounds like plausible that it would work, right? Like probably a really effective move.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway.
And then my hot girlfriend was like, man, everybody is so amazed by you. You're like the fastest and the best.
Yeah.
And like,
she's like really quirky too. Nobody really knows her. Like, nobody really sees her very much. She kind of stays low radar, but like, she's just there when I need her, you know?
Right. She broods at the top of the tower in a really cool way.
Yeah.
It's hot.
She's really deep. And so we're pretty serious.
He also has, I wrote this down before I started embracing the unreliable narrator kind of like mm-hmm. idea.
Yeah.
I wrote down that he has like surprisingly strong game.
Yeah.
With this girl.
Yeah, for sure.
Early on. Cause he's just like, he goes from being like completely tongue tied.
Yeah.
To just like spitting mad game, as
yep.
they say.
Yeah. Well, he had his sisters like to really practice with growing up.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
So, considering that there's like no other people in the town, I guess, that ever interact with them or would ask where he went. Anyway. But yeah, dude is his classic quote, you know. And we're
yeah.
Although, do you think the fact that he doesn't play an instrument makes it better or worse than the sort of quote Denna interactions?
Ooh.
Because at least like part of Quoth's whole deal was like, not only was he the best student, but he was also like a musical genius who could like woo Denna with his like beautiful songs that he would play.
Right.
Whereas this guy's just like kind of bumbling, but they like, I don't know. They're like, yeah, he's spitting game, but they don't have the same dynamic, I guess. Of a quote.
Well, the funny thing about this one is, and I apologize for referencing Name of the Wind so much, but
I mean, come on, we have to.
It has to be.
Yes.
Yeah. This guy, like, I feel like in Name of the Wind, mm-hmm. it's much more explicit how like really good it and cool Quoth is.
Yeah.
I mean, I disagree with him yeah. actually being cool, but like it is more established that yeah. he has like stronger abilities than most other people.
Yeah.
And this so far, like he's been kind of normal.
Yeah.
And everyone's like the greatest. He's the best. Like, I don't know how big this school is, but I can't imagine that the headmistress is like personally meeting with all of the students constantly. But I don't really get the sense that he's like that excelling in his classes.
No, he's
apparently I'll admit he's the fastest man alive, I guess.
Right.
He's like, I don't know, maybe better with a sword than most people when they just start out.
Yeah. Excited to see where it goes, though, where this tale goes, because yeah. I'm now on board with the unreliable narrator, and I'm looking forward to this investigator being like, yeah, I followed up on those sources you mentioned, and they all tell a very different story than what you're telling me right now, sir. So do you want to correct anything for the record, or you want that to go out as you said it?
I am willing to accept the idea that he was, because like, as we know, in reality, he was like a very powerful
yeah.
and dangerous person.
Yeah.
So like, I'll accept he's like really good at fighting. mm-hmm. stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I am assuming the unreliability part comes from like him being super cool.
Yeah.
And everybody loved him.
There's also definitely somebody he's making up here in this story. The fact that Malcolm is somebody that this investigator has never heard of before. As she's talking, she's getting the life story of like one of the most notorious people in this land. Like, and she's already investigated his other buddy. Like, she's talked to his other buddy already.
Yeah.
Malcolm would come up if he existed. Like, this...
Probably.
This is for sure something that is... Yeah, that's being added to the story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, Luke. I'm holding out hope as well.
I think it's more fun to read it that way.
Yes.
Okay, otherwise I'd get mad.
yeah speaking of getting mad, he goes into the library, which we should say he also has these little interjections about like stuff, like when he's telling the story he has little interjections about how amazed he is by something in the moment, and then he's like, yeah, made it all that much worse when it burned up in flames. But that comes later. So let me tell you about it now. And so he interjects a lot with like what's going to happen, which I actually kind of enjoy. But he asks, so Redlin asks Price, who is his sort of like older mentor figure. He asks him how many books there are in the library. And Price says, I counted... I can't remember if he says 1,000 or 10,000. I think he says 1,000. Maybe 10. Anyway, he says one of the two before he gave up, and he guesses that's about a quarter.
Yeah.
That is one of the worst ways I can think of to estimate the total number of books in a library, because what I'm understanding is he went and counted individual titles in the catalog and then eventually was like, I'm bored, I don't have time to do this anymore.
Danny's a soldier.
What?
He's a guard.
He has time to count either 1,000 or 10,000 books one at a time.
Hang on. Okay. I read this as him doing like some approximations where it was like this shelf, he like counted one shelf. He was like, okay, shelves have 20 books. And then he was like, in this quarter of the library, there's, you know, however many shelves.
No, Luke, because that is how a sane person would do it. And he specifically says he counted the books and he didn't even get a quarter of the way through. Because a sane person would do exactly what you're saying. They would say, okay, how many shelves are there? How many books to a shelf? Do some quick multiplication. It's probably around this number. Instead, he's like, I counted, there were like 10,000 and I didn't even get to a quarter of them. Price.
He's got, listen, Dan, it's a long day and he has got to fill the hours somehow.
He took a math class. I know he took a math class. Put that in there, guys.
Come on.
Multiplication.
Multiplication's tough.
That's true. They didn't have calculators, I guess, so.
No. No, it's a fair point.
Yep.
okay, another thing that I kind of actually did appreciate is the author gets a little cheeky every now and then.
Yep.
I like the note about... I think it's maybe Malcolm says that Redlin reminds him of characters that ask questions basically for exposition.
Yep, exactly.
I thought that was kind of fun.
I also appreciated that. Also, the sort of recognition of the genre within the book, because the book that Redlin is reading is like an action adventure fantasy book, and he's like, yeah, it's a quick read and it's really big, but it's really engaging. So I just like keep reading it. It's really fun.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, buddy, you're talking about us. Yeah, I like those little asides. I appreciate them.
Yeah. Okay. So, can we talk? I want to talk a little bit more about the method, the way that people are teaching in this school.
Okay. Yep.
It's very sink or swim, as they say.
Yeah, the consequences of failure are pretty brutal.
Yeah. They're also very, especially the like martial trainer.
Oof.
Or the like fighting trainer guy.
Yeah.
The worst.
The captain. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is interesting to me because I think that this does kind of make sense for a school like this.
Yeah. This is the vibe that I think it should have had from the beginning, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's correct in terms of like the writing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To set it up that way. It still bothers me.
Right. Like if your goal is to actually teach people, this is not effective pedagogy.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I want to say, I think that's, it's how they would set this school up, but yeah, not effective pedagogy. Guys, come on. If we want to get the best of out of our students, we give them the resources that they need.
Right. Right.
We physical, don't beat them also.
Yeah. Physical punishment for not knowing the rules. Not good.
Not great. The fighting guy just like beats this crap out of him.
Yeah.
And then he like kicks him while he's trying to get away. Dude, chill.
Right. Especially considering that like he, like this guy does not know the rules. It would be one thing. I mean, it's still not good, but it would be one thing if you had told them the rules, they violated the rules, you're using physical violence as a punishment. Instead, you're like, don't talk to me, smack.
Yeah.
Especially, this kind of leadership, I mean, we've, like the classic example of how this goes astray is from the movie Full Metal Jacket, where the abusive drill sergeant pushes one of these soldiers to the point where they turn the violence on the drill sergeant.
Yeah.
It sounds like this happens at some point in the book, but
yeah,
this is, you're making brittle weapons, my friend.
It's true. It's true. Well said.
Mm. But also, they just ship them out to be cannon fodder if they fail their academic classes?
Yeah.
Ah. Maybe I don't want to stay in the school, actually. I don't like math.
It's anyway, kind of, I can, we're kind of getting back to this again, but...
You mean in academia these days?
No. I mean, you and I are coming back to the same note that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
But, like, it is presumably a world in which not that many people have access to this kind of education, right?
Yeah.
And so I do feel like even the people that don't do, like, super well in the class or in the classes probably have, like, advantages over the general population,
yeah,
such that like being cannon fodder is still kind of a waste.
Yeah, but it's a punishment, Luke.
Okay.
So yeah. How else are they going to get better if they don't just die at the front lines of a pointless war?
Yeah.
That's how they learn.
You're right. You know what? You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Speaking of learning, Luke, they set them out on a survival trial.
Yeah.
And the point of this survival trial, they take them out like a 5-hour walk from the fortress. It's cold. It's snowy. They give them some tents. And they're like, we'll be back in a week.
Yeah.
Does that seem too easy to you? Because it feels kind of easy to me. And here's what I mean. Let me give some context, okay? I did do scouting as a young person, I'm an Eagle Scout. Mm-hmm. So I have some like outdoor acumen. Okay.
Do you call it acumen?
Acumen?
I say acumen.
Oh, maybe it's acumen and I'm just thinking about dinner. getting spicy. Anyway, Luke, point is, the things that you would need in a week to not die in this circumstance, one, water. Great news. Mm-hmm. There's like snow everywhere.
Yeah. Snow's everywhere. Yeah.
Two, shelter. Excellent news. They gave us tents.
Yes.
Three, maybe like heat. Like you need a way of keeping warm. There's so much firewood everywhere. And it sounds like that's not a challenge for them to light a fire.
Right.
You don't need to eat for a week. Like, I get you're going to be uncomfortable. You will not die if you don't eat for a week.
Right. I mean, okay.
So,
yeah, so I feel like the biggest dangers are freezing and like wolves.
Right. Where apparently wolves is a big part of the danger. Yeah, correct.
Right. I mean, okay. I still think that it was a tough test.
Well,
because they haven't really like been there very long.
This is true. Yeah, this is,
or maybe the other kids have, or like how much, it doesn't seem like they've actually had that much training.
Yes, I think this is fair. I think that also comes, like, maybe I guess that's why they only did a week, because they're like, these kids, we don't want to, like, they've never been camping before, we don't want to kill them.
Right.
But I will say they don't seem to struggle a lot with, like, building a fire. Like, building a fire is something that they seem able to do effectively. And if they just sat out there stoking a fire for 7 days, they would be fine.
Right.
They would be very hungry.
And they might as well do a little bit of hunting. Right? Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Maybe find some good berries or roots or something.
Do some gathering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've gotten your classes where you have to learn like the stuff that you can eat, like edible plants around.
Right. Okay. So you're feeling confident?
Oh, I'm like, they tell me I have to do this for a week and I'm like, sick. Okay, let's go. I also don't know if like leaving the tent was the move when the wolves come out.
Yeah. Well, okay, here's my question for you, because I'm not an outdoorsman person.
Mm-hmm.
So I would die.
I don't know if you would, Luke. I think you'd be okay.
I feel like the heat thing, like, it's really cold there.
Yes, yes.
And I don't know if just, like, can they keep... They would have to stay, like, right next to the fire, right?
Well, Luke, clearly you've never seen any Outdoor Boys YouTube channel videos where they talk a lot about how... In really cold conditions, like with the fire eventually like warms up the ground that you're heating.
Mm.
And so the ground retains a lot of the heat from the fire to where like you don't actually have to be that close to the fire to get the benefits of the warmth.
Okay.
And especially if they're in a place with like some big trees around, like the trees themselves are going to start to absorb some of the heat and re-radiate the heat back into the boys that are out there. So
okay, so it's more viable than I'm realizing.
I think it's more viable. I also think, I guess I should say that you're going to be burning a fair number of calories getting this fire going.
Uh-huh.
Which is fair. And so maybe you do
and
need
keeping
to
yourself like just
yeah
just
okay
body
okay
heat,
okay
right?
And so maybe you do need to eat a little bit.
Yeah,
but like you kill one deer and you're good.
One deer? Damn. It's winter.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It just didn't feel that hard to me.
Okay.
What do I know though?
Well, I'm impressed. If we have this, you'll be my number one draft pick.
Thank you.
For our big outing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to talk more about this outing actually. So I do think there's some interesting like stuff to say about, I'm forgetting the name, the kid that gets bullied.
Grabe, I think, or yeah.
So, basically the whole thing is it's these four boys and one of them is like the kid that gets bullied. Mm-hmm. Two of them are kind of the bullies. And then Redlin, our main character, is kind of like between them. And he's like wants to be friends with the bullies, but he also kind of wants to help the kid that's getting bullied.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And he does. And like they're kind of doing better.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I like that.
We like that. You know, it's good.
Total cultural victory of anti-bullying. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it is kind of like an interesting social and like character conversation when the kid that gets bullied ends up like running from the wolves and like screwing them over.
Yes. Kind of. Yes.
I thought that was kind of a fun, fun choice by the author is not the correct way of saying this, but like I did appreciate that they tried to add a little bit of complexity in here, because I feel like it would be very easy to just be like, and then they were nice to him and he like found his courage, and it was great.
Right. This isn't a Bean situation. Big throwback here to Bean.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, especially because he runs in a way that the way that they talk about it is they're like, he was running away and gonna abandon, he was like abandoning us.
Yeah.
And do you think the author here is being like, maybe he did deserve to get bullied, guys? What do you guys think? Do you guys think he actually was right? We were right for bullying him?
Well, the kids do kind of go back and forth on like the one kid is like, I was trying to help him.
Yeah.
By bullying him. And initially he's like, I see how that's the wrong move, because that not everybody responds well to that kind of approach. And then at the end he's like, I should have actually bullied him more.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Either way, I think it's nice to have a little bit of complexity in there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Turns out some kids just need to get a little bullied. Builds character, you know.
Unclear. I do think had they bullied him more, it would not have helped. It probably would have made it worse.
Yeah, probably.
But I think the interesting thing is more about like the kid that's getting bullied.
Yeah.
Has some gray in his character,
right,
rather than just being like purely sympathetic.
Right, he's not like a great guy.
Yeah,
he's kind of a loser. So I say bully him more. I say now you call him old one hand.
That's right.
You constantly go for high fives.
Right, but for the wrong hand, obviously.
Well, yeah. And then he forgets for a moment and tries to give you one.
That's,
and then you just,
that's brutal.
You just die laughing.
Got him. Got him good.
Got him good. Don't run from us, asshole. Yep.
Yeah. I have one more note.
Okay.
This is more of a general thing that is, I'm going to reference something from this book, but it's a widespread thing.
Mm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there's a scene here where he's talking, I forget who he's talking to, but it's like one of the older men at the school.
Yep.
And he's like trying to figure out what he wants to do with his life. And he's talking about like, he wants like about like, you know, maybe I could be a general at some point. And he's like, why would you want to do that? And he's like, I want to be a hero. And the guy's like, oh, then if you want to be a hero, just be a librarian or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
I think that's a sentiment that is nice. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Librarians, teachers, unsung heroes. Mm, totally
say,
agree.
Say more, Luke.
Totally agree with that.
Mm.
And then like people that want to be, you know, really good generals a lot of time. Sure. Like, you don't want to be just like killing a bunch of people. That's bad. That's not hero work.
Don't do that.
I agree. I agree with that.
Yeah.
However, Dan.
Ooh, okay, Luke. Yeah.
I do think there's like a strain of, I think that this is like a progressive idea that is like come into our consciousness. And it's also very much in a lot of fantasy where it's like, power inherently is bad almost. And so a lot of times you'll see things like this where it's like, no, you being a general would be bad.
Yeah.
Or like a lot of times when the like person that becomes the best king is the person that didn't want to be king.
Yeah. Like the goblin emperor.
Sure. Like the goblin emperor. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say it's good if you can gain and use power for good purposes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but Luke, nobody can do that. Have you ever seen any instance of somebody getting power and then using it for good?
For good?
Have you ever? I don't think so.
Ever?
Yeah.
Nothing good has ever happened?
Yeah. So
there's never been a good leader. That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, nobody's ever gotten power and then done good things with it. So clearly power is the problem.
Right. I mean, okay, I agree with the idea that like a lot of times power corrupts. Sure.
Yes.
Okay.
Big ups here. Big if true.
But like to make the world a better place, you need people that want to do good things to seek power.
Correct. Yeah.
Right. So I don't know. Heroes can be, this is going to go out on a limb. Generals can be heroes, guys.
Wow.
Okay. I know they're hurting. I know this is not a popular take, I'm sure. But
you're not wrong, Luke.
We need good people to seek power, I guess is my point.
Agreed. And we need other people to not make them feel like they're bad people just for seeking power.
Right. Don't like inherently distrust people because they want power.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay, Luke, didn't realize you're going to come down on the side of big war this episode.
That's right. I'm pro war.
Luke, notoriously pro war and general.
Yeah.
Luke's all about sending people to die for causes that they don't know that much about. Okay, cool. Well, glad we could clear that up on today's episode, Luke.
That's what I'm here for.
Yes. I'm gonna go on the record. I'm against war. Okay. And
Pro bullying though.
Pro bullying, anti-war. That's my take here. Luke, we are continuing Whispers of the Storm. We're gonna read the next third. For next week, we've had a few hot takes today, Luke. I'll say that. I can pretty much guarantee next week we're going to be continuing to bring the hot takes,
and definitely still being dumb nerds.